Hi everybody, I'm back with a set of super interesting episodes dedicated to Web3. I usually meet about a dozen new tech companies a week, and in the last few months 90% of those companies have been building products on blockchain. Metaverse projects, DeFi, NFTs, DAOs, crypto banks and apps, play to earn games, you name it. It's all about building the new decentralized digital world we've been dreaming of. And if you've been thinking how to bring your company into Web3, I found the perfect advisor for you. Today I'm speaking to Diego Borgo, an NFT and Metaverse strategist and advisor, who helped Adidas launch their very first NFT project called Into the Metaverse. We talked about why brands should be thinking about their presence in the metaverse, how to launch a successful NFT project, what are the most important distribution channels for NFTs, what is in the NFT's DNA that makes it so powerful from a community building point of view, and how Diego sees the space evolving by the end of the year. Enjoy this episode, and if you would like to learn more about how to grow in Web3, make sure you follow us wherever you're watching or listening.
Welcome to The Product Show, insightful interviews with founders and tech leaders sharing how they hack product growth.
Hi, Diego. Great to have you here.
Hi, nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
It's absolute pleasure to have you as the first guest of our second season. As I mentioned, just before we started recording, I was really looking for someone who could act as the bridge between Web2 and Web3. Because, you know, quite a lot of people from the Web3 space, they have their jargon, they feel kind of almost untouchable, which could be quite intimidating for people who come from more traditional brands and like the typical Web2 space. So I'm really glad we managed to organize this chat. So tell me a little bit more about yourself. What do you do as a strategist for NFT projects and the metaverse? And probably a little bit about your background and how did you embark on the journey to work specifically in Web3?
Sure. It's a long journey. I've been consulting brands for the last 8 years. Has been sort of like my marketing and digital strategy has been sort of like my field of expertise for the last 8 years. Specifically, well, more than last 8 years. What I mean with the 8 years is basically consulting brands. But I've been working in marketing and advertisement since I was like 16. So it's been a while. I've gone through different processes. I've seen things go up. I've seen things go down. I've seen new technologies. So, everything that's happening isn't necessarily new to me, and I see cycles repeating itself. So it's exciting to sort of like be in a position that, you know, I wasn't able to be in a position where I could create an impact when the internet showed up because I was way too young. But, be in the situation right now with blockchain technology, NFTs, Web3 and all of it, it's a place that's exciting for me to be right now. So yeah, I've been consulting brands and the last 4 years I was consulting Adidas in the headquarter. So that's basically was my last consultancy on the sort of like Web2, so to call. Obviously, there was a spin into my consulting with Adidas at the end, but majority of it was connected to digital strategies, digital marketing, launching new projects, consumer journeys, developing or helping the team to develop DTC channels as well, so direct to consumer and all of it. And I've been in crypto since 2017. A lot in the beginning was obviously focused on the technology itself. My brain, I tend to say that good part of my brain works much more on the creative side. So I have a very strong, agency and branding background where I was working a lot with creative teams and creative directors and developing strategies and campaign rollouts and all of it. So back on 2017, when I first got into the space on blockchain and cryptocurrency space, I haven't got as deep as I wanted because there was always that blocker, of like technology or development or, really intangible concepts that were really hard for me to grasp. And I never felt I could really create an impact on something like Bitcoin, right? Like, how do you create a positive impact on Bitcoin? How do you create a positive impact on Ethereum? How do you like gather with that community and build something exciting? was so intangible and so big and so far from my reality that I stuck around, but, you know, not enough to be retired now. So I did some small investments, but nothing major. I always really enjoyed the technology, and, you know, I was sort of like learning a lot about it, but I haven't like really applied anything professionally against. About a year ago, when, you know, I got into NFTs and I heard about NFTs the first time, that's where my brain just like exploded, because I've seen the technology aspect of it, which, you know, I sort of like understood, let's put well, but who does, right? It's such a new thing. But I understood quite well, like what can do, not necessarily, you know, how to develop or how to build it. But at the same time, then I saw like artists and musicians and creators and communities getting together from more like a creative point of view, uniting both things through technology and creating this entire new sphere and this entire new space. When I first seen and realized what was happening, I just couldn't look back. You know, my brain was like just mind blown. And I was like, this is interesting, this is exciting. And I definitely want to start like looking into that path. I did join a couple friends and colleagues from Adidas on sort of like a core team that was, you know, developing what then happened to be into the metaverse. The NFT from Adidas that we launched end of the year last year. So that was sort of like my really aha moment, where, you know, I start seeing and finding other people that also understand that it also were, you know, within the same vision, and then that all was built. And since the end of last year, you know, I've been entirely focused on that. The last 2 and 3 months, I've been working with NFT founders. I've been working with different brands. You know, I put myself on a role of exactly what I just said before, you know, not necessarily bridging Web 2 to Web 3, because obviously it's so new and I'm far not an expert, but my role has been sort of like bridging, you know, that conversation you mentioned, those jargons and that type of like entitlement that you have within the space, that people think that they're like genius and Elon Musk's right now. With, you know, everybody else that just wants to learn and understand what it's about. I'm sharing my experience. I'm sharing what I've seen. I'm sharing what I've built, and, you know, what I invested or what I collected. So I'm just trying to like make it easier for people to understand what this is about, as far as I understand and through my own experiences.
Yeah. And when you decided to make this kind of complete switch to NFT, what was it in the NFT technology in the space that you found so, you know, mind-blowing, can you say?
Yeah, I mean, for me, there is very few times in history where technologists get together with creators, artists, and creatives. And whenever that happens, there is a renaissance, right? If you look at art in the past as well, you know, different ways of, you know, either expressing feelings or, you know, portraying moments or portraying things, new materials for sculptures or new tools, you know, like those things shift entirely how art itself or how that side of the world happened, right? When you look at internet as well, you know, in the 90s or end of 90s, like nobody really understood or could see what this would all be about. And, you know, as soon as like the technology was there, and technologists start getting together with creative people, we're building this new world that everybody now, you know, happens to be using and is connected and all of it. So what I'm always trying to do is to look at the past and try to predict the future by cycles, right? When you look at like radio, television, internet, social media, like there is always something that repeated itself in a manner that you can sort of like see new trends and then try to analyze how that's going to play out.
Right.
Can you predict the future? For sure not. But it gives you like a good understanding. And, you know, by looking at what happened with the internet, I see a lot of patterns on what's happening with NFTs right now. And not just NFTs. There's blockchain technology that is about 10 years old. There's cryptocurrencies that are getting more and more momentum because of the obvious reasons in the current world situation we're at since like 2 years. You know, there is NFTs that are getting traction, but then there is like DeFi as well, which is such an exciting concept, and there is DAOs as well. So, you know, like I don't want to go too much on the technical side of it, but it's just this suite of technologies that are getting together and, you know, being available at scale, and then you have a lot of really creative people coming and using those tools to create a more exciting future. That really drives me to see, you know, like it's impossible to deny that there is something happening there. You know, is it a hype? Is it a phase? It is a fad. Time will say. You know, I'm all in. I think if there is somewhere that I wanted to be right now is in this space. You know, be there, stick around, create, collect, meet people, build. You know, it's undeniable that it's a bubble when you look specifically to the NFT market and to yeah. how the market has been behaving. I will never deny that. It's going to pop as the internet did, but the technology is going to stick around as the internet did. You know, in the 90s and the end of 90s, when all that craziness around internet stocks happened, you couldn't be in the 99 or 2000 right now shouting that the internet is a FUD and the internet, you know, it's going to die just because people are going crazy and throwing money at it. You cannot like put market behavior connected to technology. Those things are separate. You know, marketing behavior is obviously built on top of what the technology is offering, but you cannot FUD the technology because humans are behaving by a crazy and greedy way when it comes to the actual technology. And that's what I believe, you know, that's what makes me bullish. I think the technology is going to stick around. The technology is groundbreaking, you know, and all of it. I'm not talking about Web3, I'm not talking NFT. I'm talking about the suite of technologies that's going to be put together in a manner that's going to reshape the way we communicate and interact as humans. Will that take 5 years, 10 years? I don't know. But, you know, whoever sticks around, it's going to see. And I'm keen to stick around.
What do you say to people who still see NFTs as a pointless fad? And before you answer this question, I want to read you a paragraph from an article I read a few weeks ago. It was in Marketing Week, and it was actually by a reputable marketing professor, Mark Ritson. So here is the title: NFTs are just marketing's latest idiot magnet. And here is the paragraph from it. It's a sad state of affairs when older and more experienced marketeers are too confused or too afraid of their idiot marketing boss to be able to call out the pointlessness of NFTs and all the other hoo-ha that obscures the mission of marketing. But to all those decent men and women, I say, ignore this horse shit, this too will pass. And to those adult and obsessed with NFTs and contemplating some future conference speech about how this little thing will transform and revolutionize marketing forever, I say, get the fuck back to work. This piece was actually posted a few times in my feed, as I saw it posted by different people, many of them clapping in relief that finally someone said it. And I actually ended up in a few discussions trying to explain that what this article shows before all is the author's lack of understanding of the space and especially the technology behind it. I was called naively bullish, aggressively optimistic, and I was really blown away by the number of people who feel so negative about the space. So what do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what you don't know, right? A lot of people that are saying things like that, they haven't necessarily spent enough time in the space. Yeah. You know, they haven't necessarily tried to understand the technology and the possibilities. But more than that is the major issue I see when it comes to statements like that, which for me, it sounds very one-sided as well, right? It sounds very like a very strong opinion about something I really don't like, but I won't really tell you why I don't like it. So I don't know, like I feel the major issue is that a lot of times people are trying to predict the future by looking at the present. So, you know, like saying that NFTs are hard shit right now because people are paying $1.5 million for a photo of like a penguin, you have a point. I will never deny that. Although, you know, there are motives on why people are doing what they're doing, apart from money laundry and all of the crazy stuff that people usually throw at me, like terrorism and money laundry. I'm like, yeah, that's like conversation of like 7 years ago. Let's move from there. The same is not the case. But, you know, like I think we are at the very beginning, you know, we are early, and that tends to be like, I repeat myself over and over and over when I'm talking that we are early, because indeed we are, you know, sitting in the room right now, how many, and that's totally not related with this specific professor, because I don't necessarily know his work to criticize or to comment on, but how many quote unquote experts have been wrong in 2000s when they were saying that the internet was a FUD?
Right.
like, you know, how many, you know, so-called experts have been, or bankers, or, you know, investors have been wrong about, you know, not the valuation, but the, you know, the utility of cryptocurrencies. You know, if you, if you're following, even by far, you're following what's happening in the world right now, especially in Europe, you're seeing something you never seen before. People are positively impacting on a world crisis event by donating cryptocurrencies to a government that is in need right now to help them to get out of a situation that they are, they were put on. How crazy is that? Could you do that before with banks? No, banks are closed, right? So what I'm trying to say with all of that is, it's, I think it's dangerous to close your mind and to, you know, not at least try to understand what's happening. By the sound of it, again, I don't necessarily know his work, but by the sound of it, he's coming from a very one-sided direction. Also because, you know, there's so many use cases for this technology that aren't necessarily the mainstream aspects of it right now. Obviously, if you look into JPEGs and the so-called JPEGs and, you know, all those collections that are going for a crazy amount of money, it's alarming, but that's what makes the headlines and people read headlines, and therefore people maintain, you know, a lack of education because they think it's all about like apes and penguins and all of it. But the underlying technology is incredible as soon as you start looking into it. You know, I give you an example. I'm advising a project that's called Nemus. And this project is focused on real world impact. So what we've done is the founder has purchased 41,000 hectares of land in the middle of the Amazon forest, where we are using NFT technologies, DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, tokenomics through staking and other models, DeFi elements, decentralized finance elements to protect and conserve the area. Not just fauna and flora, but also to create a positive impact on the community that is surrounding that area. There's 25,000 people in the middle of the Amazon forest in Brazil, one of the poorest communities, that we are working really hard with the community and with the local community and with the our community, Nemus community, and developing our project to create a positive impact with in that people, you know, within that community and within that area. Would that ever be possible without this technology? It wouldn't be possible, but now it is. And that's a different use case. It's a different way of looking into that. It's a different suite of technologies on which we are putting together in order to achieve a greater good, in order to, you know, like do something that was never possible to be done before. Now, if you look into things like that, and I'm not by far saying Nemus is perfect, but if you look into applications like that, then you start understanding a little bit more what it's about. Then you start understanding the possibilities. If you want to tackle a different angle, let's talk about artists. You know, majority of the artists, the most famous artists in history, they die before seeing the success of their own work. Why? Because it was basically impossible for an artist that's upcoming to get in front of one of the biggest auction houses in the world, or to get in front of one of the biggest collectors in the world. So therefore, it was almost impossible for them to make money. Right, right now, that changed, because instead of having like that top tier of power holding, you know, access to those places, now everyone, because I believe everyone is an artist, but everyone that wants to create art can now use that set of technology, put their project or their art in a marketplace. And if someone finds value on that, they'll buy it. And if there is more value than demand, price is going to go high. Beeple is an example, $65, $69 million. Is that a FUD? Is that a bubble? Is that money laundering? Is that terrorism? No, he's a fucking incredible artist. Therefore, the market values that at $69 million. You know, so that's another use case for me that goes way far from like JPEGs and penguins and apes, which people are sort of like, they tend to look just into that and believe that that's all what it's about. It goes beyond that, you know, and I believe those are the use case we are seeing just right now, just at the beginning. You know, like look at Amazon when they started, they sold books. Now they sell everything, right? Could you say Amazon is not necessarily a great business because we're selling books? Like you're looking at the present and trying to predict the future. Look at where they at. Right, they have like rocket companies planning to ship stuff to other planets. They started with books, right? So that's kind of like how I see. I tend to keep very open mind. I tend to, you know, balance my opinions. I'm not that type of guy that goes and say, this is the future, that's always going to be about, and like, I try to balance. I understand there's a lot of FUD. I understand. I said it's a bubble. You know, I think it is. I think, but, you know, as it goes and as it develops, I think we'll see exactly the same pattern as the internet. It's going to crash. People are going to be laughing at me for 2 years because I was talking about it. But then it's going to raise out of nowhere. And it's going to be one thing that's going to change the world, hopefully for good, if done right. Because, you know, it's balancing power. It's giving creators more power. Why did social media was so exciting? Because brands had the opportunity to then connect with their consumers in a closer manner. You know, they had the possibilities of, you know, tapping into different communities, the so-called influencers. But all that work and all that relationship that was created wasn't around communities, was around influencers, was around specific persons, right? And it was in a centralized space like Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat. Now what's happening is apply the same framework, but into communities. Get that influencer and put that at scale. And then you start looking into ways that you can connect and communicate directly with your consumer, that you can connect and communicate and build things directly with your consumer. So yeah, it's a long rant, can be longer, but you know, that's what I'm trying just to portray. There are points which are valid, I'm not denying, but I also think you need to go deeper, you need to look closer, you need to dive deeper. You need to look, you know, what the possibilities are. Nobody knows like where this is going, where this is heading, what this technology is capable of. We don't know. There's a lot of things we've seen, impressive, there's a lot of bullshit. There's a lot of money grab. There's a lot of scams for sure, as everywhere.
Yeah, I really think that NFTs are offering an amazing opportunity to support philanthropic and social causes. I see it as a win-win-win situation where obviously the organization you are supporting is winning, the artist is winning, and hopefully the collector is winning as well. So it's a kind of fascinating new model that will be hopefully explored more and more in the coming years. Let's talk a bit about the different types of NFTs that are currently on the market and put them in groups. So we obviously have the profile picture, the avatar projects. We have one-to-one art. We have generative art, like art blocks. We have collectibles, my favorite NBA Top Shots, photography NFTs, music NFTs, of course, projects like Decentraland and Sandbox, where people can buy their digital real estate and build their office or projects on them. What am I missing? And what do you think will be dominating the space by the end of 2022?
Oh, play to earn for sure.
Right.
Gaming.
Yeah, I missed that. You're right. It was in my list. I should have
started. Good that, it's good that you did, because then I can use that as an example.
Yeah.
I think Play to Earn is going to be exciting. I'm surprised by the reaction of the gaming community. Mm. You know, like...
Why surprised?
Because it's been negative. Majority of the gamers are like, no, NFT is bullshit. And like, well, no, we don't want to have that. And I'm surprised, you know, like I'm trying to understand. I'm not a gamer. Let's start from there. But I'm trying to understand why they are so against it. I think one of the main points obviously is connected to play to earn. I think it's a bad name, and I think it gives you bad expectations, because play to earn, people are like, I'll play games and I'm gonna become millionaire. That's what they're expecting. And that to happen, there is no way that the game's gonna be fun. And the game not being fun, it won't be engaging. And the game not being engaging, nobody's going to stick around. And therefore, that business model is broke. I think that might be why a lot of gamers are against it, because all about gaming is community engagement and fun and having a great time and being able to do something exciting. And I think as soon as you start adding like financial layers to it, it gets more complicated. But what I think is interesting about that aspect is play to earn, at least from my point of view, should be something that's more connected to before you used to pay like 50 or 100 bucks to play a game, and now you make 50 or 100 bucks by playing that game, right? Like if you lower the expectations and you can like not necessarily see that as a full-time job or something that you're going to be doing as a normal gamer, not as a pro gamer, I think that shifts a little bit the narrative. That takes a lot of pressure from the builders, from the creators. you know, because expectations in this space are insane, you know, literally insane, because you can just like get so much out of your return of investment that people were like totally spoiled. So I think that that could be sort of like a subtle shift on narrative that might, you know, resonate with more people. Why I'm surprised as well is because if you're a gamer and you've been playing games for a long time, you are used to buy skins, you're used to buy in-game items, you're used to buy, you know, land or, you know, potions or anything that gives you a power up.
Weapons.
Weapons. So that, to understand that for a normal person, by normal, I mean someone that doesn't play game, a normal user apart from a gamer, it's really difficult for someone to understand why the hell pay money on something that's just digitally, right? And that's the entry barrier for NFTs. So a gamer already has in their mentality on why they would pay for something that just exists digitally. So they're like 80% closer to understanding NFTs. You know, the difference is that now you have provenance, and now you have royalties, and now you have, you know, a sort of like a on-chain, you know, information that you can look it up, that you can display ownership, that you can understand what it's coming from, that you can sort of like, you know, be part of that project by owning a certain token. So like that last bit is what's missing for gamers to understand NFTs. And I would expect that it would have a easier time. And, you know, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just really trying to understand why they don't really get it, or not all, but there is a very strong pushback from the community on not getting it. So I'm with my ears open there, because for sure they have a point. But going back to sort of like play to earn, I think, you know, it's undeniable that that industry has always been in the foreground. It's undeniable that that community has always been sort of like in the edge of technology and innovation. And I've seen a lot of games on the build for a long time, and, you know, they are coming closer and more towards this model, which is going to be interesting. So I'm not saying it is the future and it's going to be perfect. What I'm saying is, by the end of the year, I think we're going to be talking a lot about play to earn, and we're going to be seeing a lot around this space. You know, Axie Infinity has been around for a long time. I'm not saying Axie is great, but they already display a sort of like a business model within play to earn that, you know, has worked for a certain, you know, part of the community as well. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about a project specifically that's called Riot Racing. Think about Need for Speed, but on chain, on Polygon. And they are doing that. You know, you have racetracks, you have like, you have gas stations, you have like billboards, you have mechanic shops, you buy cars, you can tune them, you can run, you can race. You can, you know, change parts, and more race you have, the more developed your driver gets and all of it. Those things are exciting. I think, you know, there is tokenomics behind, there is staking methodologies, there's DeFi aspects to it. So I think that there is an interesting connection there where things going to start developing as well. So I think we're going to be talking a hell lot about game in the upcoming months. And I don't think PFP is going to go anywhere. I think, you know, everyone is looking for an identity, specifically in a place where majority of the people are unknowns, or want to be anon, or is just part of the culture. And what is the best way to do that if not by displaying a PFP on Twitter, or now that, you know, Twitter is verifying that, or Discord, or whatever the hell you are at. So I don't think PFPs are going anywhere, you know, apart from a lot of people wanting to. I don't think it is. But I think gaming is going to be sort of like the next big thing we're going to be talking about when it comes to like specific that part of the space. But if you want to really, you know what is the next groundbreaking thing, which has the power not just to shift the direction of the space, but has the power to shift a lot on how we organize ourselves as human beings and how we communicate with ourselves, you're gonna need to start looking into DAOs as well, decentralized autonomous organizations, right? Because that's exciting. That's something that wasn't possible before without this technology. And I think we are, again, if we are early with NFTs, if we are like in 1995, 1994 with NFTs right now, DAOs, I think we're like mid-70s. You know, this has like, in my point of view, a huge potential to disrupt how we organize and interact and you know, behave as human beings. So that's where my mind's at. That's where I'm trying to learn more and more about. I'm far from like understanding it all, but I'm spending my hours in there. You know, I'm contributing to some DAOs. I'm part of the other DAOs. I'm looking into building DAOs, and I'm excited about how what it's going to bring, especially for brands, especially for IP owners, especially for business. I think it can be really disrupting.
No, excellent. Let's go back to your kind of expertise with brands. Tell me the main reasons why you think brands should be on the metaverse and the NFT space, and why they shouldn't ignore it, really.
Yeah, I think the first question to answer is like, should all brands be there? The answer is definitely no. You know, should all brands have a YouTube channel? Should all brands have social media presence? Should all brands be like on LinkedIn? Should all brands be on Twitter? Like, no, right? There are different strategies. There is different methods. There is different sort of like values that different brands will use, you know, different ways of engaging with their consumers. I'm not saying NFTs and metaverse is a new channel, far from it, but I don't think it's going to be organic or natural to every single brand to be using this new way of communicating, because maybe they don't have to, they have other ways, right? Just wanted to give that caveat before. Why I think it's important, I think let's break two things apart from each other. So usually, you know, NFTs and metaverse tend to be put on the same bucket, and they aren't necessarily the same thing. So let's break those things apart, just for the sake of example. I think NFTs have, as it stands today, the power of giving brands the possibility of tapping into new consumer, clients, user bases that they wouldn't necessarily be able to connect with before. That's one aspect. So it's sort of like a reach element, you know, that wasn't necessarily possible before, either because those people were interested in the brand, or because the brand didn't really have a way to talk to them. There is a possibility there. The second aspect is now, you know, that you can tap into either existing communities where you can find a very clear, you know, sort of like group that you can talk with, or you can partner with, or you can add value to, or you can join forces with, or you can enter a certain space, which didn't exist before NFTs, because they were created for NFTs. So you have all those like different communities you can tap in and like go and talk and create and co-create and be part of right now, which is an expansion when it comes to, you know, a target group or demographics. And the third aspect for me is you as a brand now have the possibility of, you know, co-creating and co-collaborating and co-owning things with your consumer, which it was possible before, but not at scale and not in a safe space and not in a way that is being done right now through this technology. So those three aspects are really interesting. Two of them are basically expansion of demographics or consumer targets, or you know, expansion of reach. And the third, which is the one that's the most exciting for me, you know, is basically the fact that you can now get together with consumers and shape and create the future of your brand with them rather than to them. Before, it tend to be like a brand puts something out, or they do some consumer research or whatever thing they've done in the background, and they would just basically create something and put out there and see it sticks, or they would do like loads of research and, you know, put products out there and like reiterate. Now, what I think is really exciting is that you can literally get together with your community and co-create things together, you know, and build and shape, and more than just the creation of it, there is the co-ownership where, you know, there is manners of giving fractionalized ownership of certain things, or fractionalized revenue or fractionalized benefits from what that relationship has created. As I said before, there is that win-win-win situation where the brand's winning, the consumers that are being part of that pool of, you know, closer group is winning, and the overall consumer from that brand is winning as well. Because, you know, the likelihood of a product being better or more engaging or more exciting after passing through that sort of like funneling of quality or co-creation or collaboration is much higher, and there is a much bigger chance of succeeding than 10 marketeers throwing darts at the wall and thinking what consumers want to get next, right? So I think that's exciting. I think that's sort of like short-term, present, right now what's happening. I think if you look into membership, membership's exciting. Membership 3.0, I believe NFTs do a lot of that. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, how much money can we make? Like, how much money can we make? Like, again, that's the short-term ROI type of mentality. I think there is money to be made, undeniable. But I think the most interesting thing right now is how can you create a truly engaging community around your brand that is connected to, you know, the KPI or success here looks like how many people can we have compared to the amount of NFTs we put out, for example. So let's say there's 30,000 NFTs out there, you have 25,000 unique wallets or unique holders, and there's a very, very good chunk of that audience that is very active within the communities you're building and shaping, and you're sort of like doing a lot of things with them. I think that's exciting. I think that, you know, there is a lot to be done on that aspect of community. If you want to go beyond, I think the beautiful thing right now is that brands have a new space where they can tap in to create reward impact and reward, you know, create positive impact in the world. You know, think about an example. Word of Woman, great project, has been around first or one of the very first woman-led projects, you know, which has been core focus is you buy the project, the royalties goes into supporting artists, women in the space, women artists in the space. Like great cause, very straightforward, a lot connected to education, a lot connected to bringing more women to a space, which we know is majority of it is male dominated. The bro culture is very strong still within the space. So think about Word of Woman as sort of like a very great entry point for a brand that has the same values or that resonates or has the same mission. I don't know, L'Oreal, for example, could be a good example. It's a brand that, you know, represents a lot for women, or Dove is another great brand, which, you know, talks a lot about inclusion, diversity, has displayed a lot of it on its campaigns and its sort of like brand vision, mission, all of it. Really cool. Imagine now this brand coming in and partnering with like Word of Woman, which is a good example, and using their brand as a platform to help more women get into tech, or to help more women get into this space, or to help more women to find a different angle on which they can now make something that they're more excited about. You know, it's a lot about education, it's a lot about empowerment, it's a lot about, you know, getting together and like supporting causes. So what I'm trying to say with all of it is that there is also, apart from all that like marketing jargon conversation of like target group, audiences, and ROI, there is also like a very strong branding aspect on which brands can take advantage of right now, and literally tap in very organic and very engaging communities, you know, true brand values or true brand, visions and stuff like that. So that's where I think is exciting for brands.
Yeah. So we already have the communities created for them.
Exactly.
They need to find
a lot of brands I'm working with. They're like, oh, what should we do? Like, can we launch an NFT? I was like, no, you don't have to launch an NFT. Mm. Identify a community that resonates with your brand. Go there, add value to them, and find a way that, you know, you can make something really exciting and create a positive impact on the world through this major machine you've got that now you can use that in a manner that can, you know, everybody can win. Right. So like that's where maybe you should be starting off. It's right. Not like trying to say, oh, we're going to make 30 million in a week, because cool, you can do that. Probably that doesn't represent a lot for your brand, depending on the size of your brand. But then what is next?
Hmm. Right.
So, you know, by partnering with those communities, you really create that sort of like long lasting relationship if you do it right. But also, you know, you're tapping into an entire new consumer base or entire new user base, which, you know, can definitely afterwards be, you know, brought in back to your brand or to purchase your product or to engage with whatever you're building or whatever you offer. You know, it comes more from an angle which is you're going to give and you're going to sort of like add value to first, to then sort of like, you know, get the benefits afterwards. So you know, it's, we've seen the same with social media. I mean, the beginning of social media was like post offers about your products and tell people to buy whatever you sell. And people then start understanding storytelling is key, you know, committed engagement is key, you know, displaying that we care about social cause or, you know, environment or impact, positive impact in the world is key. So it shifts the narrative as well. And I think brands have learned a lot from the last 10, 15 years of social, And now it's a bit easier for them to understand this space and how to tap into it. But yeah, it's still early.
Yeah, I have the feeling sometimes that many brands see it just as another digital channel. And I mean, at Pony, we are already working on a few NFT projects, creating purely the creative part of it. But for many, I have the feeling they're a bit driven by FOMO rather than kind of the real passion and understanding of the space. Can you give me other examples of brands that you think have done it right and launched like really successful campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, the FOMO aspect is understandable because it's a crazy hype. Everybody's talking about it. Every CMO is pushing like a direction now. Hey, we should enter the metaverse, or we should enter NFTs, right? So I understand the difficulty right now is education, such a new thing, you know, and what tends to happen is that, you know, some trainee have said that they bought an NFT, and then that person becomes like, you're going to teach the whole company, you know, which is exciting because they love how things are shifting within organizations. But education,
the generation thing, I think it's very valid. I mean, I completely agree with that.
Totally.
I've seen that from 18 times. Years old, to be honest.
Well, yeah, 14, 13, 12.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, I think education is the main issue right now, because what tends to happen when there is a new trend or something new in the space is that, you know, brands call their, you know, consultants from the 90s and say, oh, what should we do here? And they're like, oh, I don't know, but we're going to send you something. And then it starts from there, right? Which is obviously difficult. So I think the math issue right now is there is something really exciting that's happening. Very, like, nobody knows where this is going. There's a very small amount of demographics that understands that because they've spent enough time within the space. And those people not necessarily are, you know, willing to work or interested working or have the skills to work with brands. So that creates sort of like, one, you have FOMO, but two, you don't have like the proper tools or the proper, you know, road to success, because education is an issue. So I think like that's sort of like the problem we are seeing right now. You know, I think a good way of start, you know, looking into entering the space is much more connected to like literally spending time within the space. You know, the best way for everyone to be learning right now is by spending time. You know, you don't need to invest. You don't need to spend money. If you think it's a fad, then it's a bubble, it's gonna explode. Cool. Keep your money safe. Just spend time. Look around. Ask people that are within the space why they do what they do and why they think this is going where it is going. You know, consume content and education. I think that's sort of like a good way to start looking into it.
Yeah, I think that the community element of the NFT space is just really been mind blowing. I've been involved in online communities in the last 10, 15 years since they literally existed. In all honesty, I don't think that we really understood what an online community is until 2021. Many brands, they had like their large social media audiences, the lucky ones, they had the brand advocates, but in reality, very few actually have real engaged online communities. And looking what is happening in the NFT space, I think it's on a completely different level. People are so passionate, so engaged, they really care. A couple of weeks ago, I posted, I kind of love this, I don't know if you know the Hape project, the 3D apes by Digimental.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to get one, and but more of them were looking like men. And I posted on Twitter using their hashtags, hey guys, can you help me find a female looking Hape? Like within 30 minutes, I got dozens and dozens and dozens of requests of people literally suggesting different Hapes. They never met me. They were kind of genuinely engaged and interested and, you know, very kind. So I think that is really, really different from what we've had in the space so far. So what do you think is the NFT's DNA that make it so powerful when it comes to community engagement? Obviously, we shouldn't really kind of ignore that there is the financial element. Obviously, you invest money, so you have pure interest in that to grow. But is there more to that? What is it that makes it so special?
Yeah, I mean, the financial aspect, just to clear that first, is obviously a point, right? People tend to buy something and then protect their bags or pump their bags so they make more money. No brainer, absolutely clear. We acknowledge that. And I think that's one of the, you know, one of the main issues with the space is that there's a lot of like, you know, financial conversations rather, and it's very loud, and sometimes it gets very, very loud, especially on bull markets. Yeah. You know what we've seen a month ago, 1.5 months ago, it becomes like everybody's making money and there's so much money and it's all about money. And now, which is bear market, you just like, you barely hear people talking about money because like nobody's buying anything. And then it goes back to creation. So let that aside. What I think it's really interesting, or why people are so engaging, I think people tend to be excited about new things. You know, not everyone, but a good amount of people tend to be excited about new things. And this specific space brings together, you know, several different people with different backgrounds and different talents into the same space. And then collaboration sort of like organically, you know, is born through that. Because as I said before, you got people that are technologists, and you got creators, and you got artists, and you got entrepreneurs, and you got writers, and you got musicians. So you have this pot of creativity happening, and people are creating dope things. You know, people are creating things that are incredible and that resonate. It's coming from culture, it's from people to people. And I think the sort of like the byproduct of all of it is engagement, or people being excited to be around. And especially I think for women, or for you know, people that are coming to the space right now, newcomers in general, but especially for women, I think there was this conversation the last 12 months, at least, that I've seen, of people really wanting to get more people into the space, especially women. So I think, you know, once people see that that's happening, they really want to like help and push forward, because everybody within the space understands that the only way for us to be and achieve what, you know, the overall space wants to do, which is be sort of like this new technology on which we can create and co-create the future together, is by mass adoption, is by, you know, more people coming to the space. So I think a lot of it is connected to, one, I found this thing that's really exciting, I need to tell you about because you're going to love it. And two is like, the only way for us to go forward is by having more people that share this passion with us. So whatever is the problem you're facing right now, let us help for you to like take that out of the way. And I find that's really exciting. You know, I think obviously is that main adoption or mass adoption connected to financial gains? Yes, because if there's more people into the space, there is more liquidity and all of it. But I think a lot of times that's not necessarily the main goal. You know, I'm really advocating for, you know, mass adoption and you know, more people coming in, just because I truly believe that is one of the very first times in history that everyone that wants to create something, or can create something, or has something to say or something to put out there, has the chance now to make something outstanding. You know, I think we are leveling the sort of like this hierarchy that it, you know, tends to exist. And I'm not saying it won't, it probably will, but right now it doesn't. Where, you know, creators have chance to create something exciting, you know, and for me, like, the main aspect of all of it, I see NFTs and metaverse and all of that as sort of like the, you know, the horse Trojan for the Trojan horse for cryptocurrencies and decentralization, you know, is a way that before me in 2017, not really going all in on blockchain and cryptocurrencies because it wasn't resonating with my brain, my creative brain. Now, when I see something that's really creative, I don't really need to understand what is behind, what is empowering it. I want to be part of it. And, you know, I'm really bullish that the future should be decentralized. I'm not saying it is right now, but the vision it is to be. And the way we're going to be doing that is through this technology, you know, blockchain by its heart. It's what, you know, what's meant to do. And we need to shape and reshape and keep working on making sure that's going to get where we want it to get. I think we have the power now to sort of like shape future. And that's why I think this community is very engaging as well.
Okay, I want to pick your brain on a few practical things. Let's say I run the marketing department of a cosmetics brand. Let's say that's The Ordinary. And we as a team have decided that we want to enter the space and launch an NFT campaign or something else exciting in the metaverse. Where do I start from? Obviously, I can call Diego Borg or other advisors in the space. I definitely don't want to rely on my Web2 marketing background. And I'm sure there are many different angles you can enter the space with a bang. But are there any golden rules brands should consider before they decide to enter the space?
Yeah, I think the first step is it's coming from the why, right? Like, do we understand enough about what this is and why do we want to do it? And then probably the answer is we don't really understand, but I think it makes sense. But then why does it make sense, right? I think it starts questioning a lot of that. It's not like, oh, our CMO told we have to do something and then we need to do something, right? Yeah. It's a lot connected to the why, I think is very important. You know, I think taking time is very important. You know, not going back to that FOMO. I think a lot of brands were like, we want to be the first, but we don't know what we're doing, but we don't want to be the last, but till we are the you know, till we learn, maybe we're going to be the last. I think that race doesn't really matter. I think it's really connected to sort of like, how can you do that in a meaningful way that really resonates with your brand values and with your consumers and with what you stand for? I think like that sort of like more philosophical question is important to understand. But then what I would go towards next is more like a strategic way, which is get your sort of like brand guidelines and you know, like really clear brand strategy decks and look how can this fit into that strategic way of thinking, right? How can we look into building a strategy for entering metaverse or entering the NFT space on which fits within what the brand stands for, what the brand's trying to achieve in the next 5-10 years. I think, you know, not forcing it through, but really trying to understand how that can complement or how that can build upon what has been laid out for the overall brand strategy. That will be sort of like my second step as soon as you realize, yeah, it makes sense for us to do it. And then the third step will be, you know, start like as a person within a team, you start really spending more time in the space and trying to identify projects that you know a consumer from your brand would be resonating with, or that your brand as a whole would be resonating with. And then you study, break down, dissect, and understand exactly what those projects are doing, why they're successful, how their community is, and then start understanding or trying to get closer to them to be able to learn from them to see, you know, what's the best approach for us. And then I think as soon as you start going through that learning process, it's going to become very clear that now you have a why. Now you have also like, you know, how you're going to connect that with your brand strategy. And now you have sort of like, you know, what you could potentially do because you learn through those communities. And before creating anything, I think the best thing to do is understanding whatever we have in mind or whatever the brand has in mind right now of doing. The key question to be asking is, could we do what we want to do if this technology didn't exist? Because a lot of brands are trying to do just classic activations or classic, you know, campaign rollouts, but they are adding the name NFT at the end. Mm-hmm. But they could do exactly the same thing without NFTs, without metaverse, without blockchain, without any of this technology. And if you find that the answer is yes, then I would recommend you going back, taking a step back and trying to refine and understand, because this space, people are within this space, at least right now, because again, we are early, are very sensitive to cash grab. We've been rugged and, you know, scalped and punched and all what you can imagine by all type of ICOs, all type of like crypto rugs, all type of unknown teams. So as soon as we see something that we are like, that's going to be shady, people vanish. And you don't want your brand to be connected with that. Right, the like the bullshit rudder within the space is really sensible, and people really sense check it far away because that's the nature of the Wild West, and crypto is still a very big Wild West. So I think, you know, like doing that due diligence might take a long time, especially in bigger organizations, but it's really important because that's going to give the perception when you come in, you know. And if you're very lucky, to have people within your organization that have been in the space for enough time to be able at least to give you some experience and guidance, that's exactly who you want to grab and bring to your team. It's all about like the actual education and understanding the space, you know, and how you can do that in authentic and sort of like, authentic manner. I think that's the key word, you know, how can you be authentic to the space?
Yeah, and I think nothing really can compare to spending time on Twitter and Discord and getting to know people and watching the space. For me at the moment, Twitter and Discord are the king and queen in terms of distribution channels. That's where the real NFT communities and the metaverse community really thrives. Am I missing anything? Is there another underutilized channel that you think would probably explode and we should be spending more time on it?
I think as this conversation evolves to the level of conversations that we are having, where we want to help marketeers, entrepreneurs, brands and companies to understand if there is something for them within the space, I think LinkedIn is going to explode. That's why I'm spending a lot of my time there, because my role is being bridging Twitter and Discord craziness into a more digestible way on LinkedIn, where people can learn and understand and see what's happening and where I share my experiences, so people can feel if that's the right direction or feel is that direction they want to go. So I think LinkedIn is really underutilized right now. I've done an experiment a couple weeks ago where I gave early access to a project that I advise on. And I haven't seen that before on LinkedIn. I don't know if it was the first, but it doesn't matter. And I had a crazy engagement and a very crazy amount of response of people that either are already within the space and were excited about the project, or are not in the space, don't have a wallet, don't have crypto, but wanted to learn more so they could join the project. So, that's what I think is exciting, because, you start looking into community building on LinkedIn, which tend to be just sort of like thought leaders or people that are just like really talking about like, corporates or more like the high level professional stuff. And now we can sort of like, bridge that gap as well of creating new communities that are more diverse or, that are coming from very different angles, not just necessarily for marketing or entrepreneurship or this, that's more like connected to the overall, whatever the project is about, for example. So I think LinkedIn is an interesting platform right now. I think it's very underutilized. LinkedIn was fighting a lot with profile pictures in the beginning, like, just putting them down and like shutting people down. And I think they took a break, or I think I am very under the radar. So, I'm glad we can do that. And I hope they find a proper way of doing that in the future that doesn't go against their policies or whatever. But I think the momentum within this platform is really interesting. Engagement is really high. It's something as I see as on Twitter. And I see a lot of people spending more time there. And obviously from a lead point of view, so many people, like I get about 30 DMs a day of people like, hey, do you want to like partner in this project? Do you want to talk about this thing? Do you want to, consult this brand? Or do you want to like build something together? Or do you want to just chat like, oh, I see you posting and I don't know anything about it. Would you mind like giving 5 minutes and explaining what this is about? So like I see interest. 99.99% of my relationship has been positive, which is really refreshing, because we know social media tend to be that black hole where people just, talk crazy to others because they're hidden behind a keyboard. And I think the beauty of LinkedIn on everyone having sort of like their professional network in there, it still doesn't do it perfectly, but a lot of people have common sense to understand if they go mad on someone, like that's not necessarily good for their professional relationship, although it happens a lot. But I feel it's been very positive. People are generally curious and interested to learn. And, I'm just trying to share my experiences there. So I think that place is exciting.
What can we do to increase adoption and invite more people to the space, make them excited about it? Do you have any practical tips? I love your LinkedIn updates. I think they're a great effort to kind of humanize and simplify the space and make it feel less intimidating? What else can we do?
Well, I think there are three things I am personally doing to do that, because that's sort of like the mission I take on, I took on. One is education. You know, I think it's key. I think, you know, that type of conversation we're having right now, which I always try to be very blunt. I always try to be very raw when, like, I'm not pushing an agenda and I'm not, like, trying to convince you that this is the future. I think it is, in my perspective and my experiences, and I try to show people why I think this way. That's how I roll. And I think education, you know, as much as possible is the way. I think a lot of people struggle to understand, because it's such a complex environment. First, you need to understand blockchain. Then you need to understand cryptocurrencies. Then you need to have a digital wallet. Then you need to understand how you connect. Then you need to understand, like, gas, or depending on the network you're using. Then you need to understand a smart contract. Like, it gets, like, endless. And the more you dive, the deeper it gets. The rabbit hole is real. So I think education, whoever can crack the problem of education at scale, you know, it's up for something really important. So I'm spending a lot of my time there, you know, through this type of conversation, through LinkedIn, through, I've onboarded 200 plus people to the space, people that came to me and say, hey, can you help me? Not like people that I'm forcing to come into this space. I'm trying to spend a lot of my time in there. So I think first pillar is education. The second pillar, I think, is really connected to brands. That's why I choose that way. That's why I choose that avenue. That's why I'm working with brands. You know, I know I have a lot of friends and fellows from the space that preferred not working with corporate. That's a new world. We don't want to den in. We are anti-corporate. I'm like, sure, but they are the ones that are going to bring the consumer base. They're the ones that are going to educate at scale. If they do it right, they're going to enrich the space by bringing millions and millions of people that wouldn't come in if it wasn't for them. So you also need to understand a little bit more of the long-term vision, which is making this space you know, inclusive and bring a lot of people in so we can build something really exciting for the future. That's why I work with brands. And the third step for me is really real world impact projects. You know, like for the skeptics or for the people that really don't understand, can we show them that this is way more than JPEGs and apes and penguins and all that craziness? Can we show them that we can make people's life better by using a new suite of technology that without that technology wasn't possible to be done before? You know, I use that example again of what's happening right now, especially in Miro, because there was a DAO formed for supporting Ukraine. There is a NFT collection formed to support Ukraine. And there is, like, several different, you know, projects that are receiving funds and repassing those funds, because now the Ukrainian government has created several different digital wallets to receive those funds. How incredible is that? That wasn't possible to be done before. And that's another way where we can show to the world, yes, there is a utility for this technology apart from penguins and apes and all of that. So, you know, real world impact solutions, I think, are also key for that. I'm trying to spend as much time as I can within those three buckets and add as much value as I can within those three buckets, because of my playbook, I think that's the way we're going to get there.
I have a hard time with the anonymity in the space, to be honest, and, you know, the doxing, how they want to call it. I don't know. There is something about, you know, not knowing who is behind the project that really bothers me. And I would never get involved in a project if I don't know the team behind it. And I believe that kind of the more the NFT space matures, the more we would need to know the real identities of the people who actually work on those projects. I don't know. Do you think I'm getting this wrong? Is this like my Web2 self creeping in and not letting me understand the space completely? Or is this the future? Probably we'll be seeing less and less anonymity and more people will be putting their faces and backgrounds to give credibility to their projects.
No, I mean, I wouldn't never say you're wrong. I think it's very important and very wise to understand criterias on why you do and why you don't, or where you do and where you don't invest your money. So that's very wise. And if that's a criteria, that's absolutely fine. I think it's a very hard conversation, because it comes from, there is positives and cons on both sides, right? But what I think on the why it is how it is, I think it comes as sort of like a heritage from crypto, where, you know, there is very clear and important motives why someone wants to remain anon within cryptocurrency, for example. One, you're working against the biggest powers in the world by developing decentralized solutions that can pretty much put in dangers like banks and central bank and governments. So you might want to hide your identity when you're trying to do things like that. So I understand that. Secondly, it's getting better, but for a long time, you know, taxes or taxation was never like so clear. I think there are a few countries right now that are really like working hard and getting more and more clarity on that. But it's not because there are people that do it. I'm not saying they don't, but it's not necessarily because you want to like hide or don't pay taxes. But a lot of times it was just not like clear or possible to understand how do you do that? So, you know, there was a motive why people want to remain anon because there was no really set of rules in place. Again, I'm not saying that others don't do that because they don't want to pay taxes. There's a bunch of them that do too. And then third, you know, is a lot connected to technology. It's all tech. It's all in the air. It's all the blockchain. What is the blockchain? I don't know where the blockchain is at. So if you have a lot of liquidity or a lot of people within the space have majority of their savings in the space and someone finds out, that ledger that you have sits at your home and they know that you have a ledger, therefore you have a seed phrase. Therefore, if they find both, you're gone. And by knowing your face, they know your address. That's pretty dangerous, you know? So I understand those three aspects from like why I think people do and why that's like a heritage from crypto. And I think because of a lot of people that are building and are builders on DeFi and NFT, they came from that background, they brought that heritage with them. So that's one aspect. I think another aspect is also connected to, just not being willing to be a target. I think especially when it comes to, thought leaders or influencers, if you want to call people like that, they become a very easy target, depending on what they say, especially on this crazy consolidation culture we are living at right now. So by showing my face and telling me what I'm telling you, maybe someone can get this video in 10 years from now, cut and place things around and make me sound like a crazy person. And that, is connected to my face and therefore that's be connected to me forever. In a space that is so new and like, unstable like crypto, a lot of people feel better by hiding their identities. I think that's also connected to like personal protection, right? So those are the motives why people do it in my point of view. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing all the time. I think obviously a lot of bad actors take advantage of that and you could see through smart contracts that a lot of the projects are copy and paste and they just shift around the anons and they use the same projects and they keep scamming people from different angles, which is an incredibly bad thing. So I'm 100% with you there on, not putting your money there because you just don't trust and believe. So I don't think there is like a prediction or a true answer to that. I have nothing against anonymity. I think it's a beautiful thing from blockchain, specifically when it comes to data protection. All I need to be and play in this game is a digital wallet and a password and a seed phrase, obviously. No other information. Nobody knows my name. Nobody knows my address. Nobody knows technically my IP, but obviously we know it's not true. But, depending on the wallet you use. So this is what's great because, the Web3 aspect for me that's really exciting, which includes anonymity, is that you're, again, leveling up the entry to the space, no matter who you are. We've seen lately the craziness of, people from Venezuela not being able to access their digital wallets because the current embargo in the economy. Those are things that Web3 was supposed to fix and is supposed to fix. And there is some wallets out there that don't do that by the right way still. But, I think a lot of things are connected to that. So it's an impossible answer to say, is this right? Is this wrong? What I try to do is also size like the whole sphere and try to understand, why people do it. But there's always pros and cons. It's difficult. I am pro or I am against? I'm pro. I think it brings more benefits than problems so far, especially if people have the same mindset as you. If you don't want to invest on something because people are anon, cool, don't invest on it. Done, right? But if you do, then you're taking the risk and that's up to you. And by taking off the middleman, which are banks, for example, and we becoming our own custodians, we are taking entirely the risk towards ourselves. So we need to know what we want to do with our seed phrase, with our money and with all of it, you know? So I think that's a wise way to think, but I'm pro anonymity. I think it brings a lot of benefits, especially on, you know, the way that the current global economy and the current world is heading off after the last 2 years. I think anonymity is becoming more and more important.
And it's the sort of enigma of the space, really. We want complete decentralization, but in order for it to be really successful, unfortunately, we need some sort of regulation. So when exactly we're going to get the balance right, we don't know. Only the future will tell. It's been absolutely pleasure to have this chat with you, Diego. It was super interesting as expected. So before I let you go, just tell me your prediction. Where do you think the NFT space is heading to? So are we witnessing a crash? Is the bubble bursting at the moment? And where do you see it in the next couple of years or so?
Present, I don't know. It's clearly a little bear today on the 8th of March. It's a little bear, but there is always ups and downs in the NFT space. And if you're not into just for the money, that doesn't really matter, which is my case. You know, I'm in for long term. I'm here to learn. I invested as little as I could, go to a casino, put it down. And if I lost that in 5 minutes, I'll be laughing. So that's how over-invested I am. You know, I'm sleeping well. So it's not connected to the financial aspect for me. So that's the present. Will there be a bubble? 100%. I'm not, no questions about it. What we've seen from a human behavior and all the greed and all of it, it's clear that's going to happen. Now, when it's going to happen, I don't know. Otherwise, I will be trillionaire a couple of years or not, because I would be able to read the top or the bottom of one of the, you know, the most exciting runs on financials that we've seen in the last years. So it's undeniable, but it's going to happen. I don't know when. But as I said before, the technology is going to stick around. The technology is what is really exciting. The technology is going to go through all those processes as it did with the internet. I see the very clear connection there. And that's where I think it, you know, in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, 10 years from now, I think if I can predict something from my very limited prediction skills, I would say that 10 years from now will be almost impossible finding someone. Obviously, I'm not talking about 8 billion people that live in the world, but within your professional circle, for example, will be almost impossible finding someone that isn't owning something digitally only, or something, or owning something digitally on the blockchain, that being NFTs, that being metaverse, that being whatever the hell the technology is going to be by there. But we will shift from 95 or 100% physical ownership to a much larger digital ownership. If you think about the last 10 or 15 years that we spend online in the metaverse, we are in the metaverse. This is the metaverse already, right? The new metaverse is an evolution of the current metaverse. You and I are on it right now, digitally somehow. The amount of time we've spent digitally in the last 10 to 15 years, and we haven't owned anything physically, displays that there is a major gap to be filled, because we as humans, we will need ways to communicate online. And, when this screen that's pretty bad right now is you and I in a 2D video, becomes something more engaging, becomes like a 3D platform, becomes something we can put Googles on, becomes something that we can put haptic gloves on, becomes something that you're going to work with people all over the world on that space. You're going to play games, you're going to invest, you're going to hang out. As soon as that becomes reality, we will need ways to, you know, express ourselves and communicate to others in there as well. And obviously that's going to be things you're going to own digitally, that being wearables, that being any type of product or whatever. I think that's where the next 5 and 10 years are headed.
Excellent. Yeah, the hardware barrier at the moment feels bigger than the software. And the moment we get, you know, some proper gear in our hands, it would be absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Diego. Where can people find you online, on Web2?
Yeah, LinkedIn, Web2. You can find me there, Diego Borgo. You can find me there. I'm an alien. You find me, purple background. I'm Meta Hero from Pixel Vault. It's a great project. And you can find me on Twitter, Don_Borgo. That's my Anon account, not anymore. So that's where you can find me.
So that's it for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. This podcast was brought to you by Pony. We spent our time designing the future of Web3. Check us out on pony.studio.